Greetings, everyone. This is Koku from the Bitter Medicine Podcast, inviting you to tune in to the Bitter Medicine Podcast on KWAZ Radio.
Peace, family. This is Oni, inviting you to listen to the pro-black perspective, where black problems are addressed with black solutions.
Oh, welcome, welcome, welcome to the seventh episode of our interview segment of the Harsh Reality Podcast. And in this segment, we look to bring on professionals, influencers, scholars, any knowledgeable or interested individuals to tell their own story and also hear their unique takes on the news of the day. And personally, I think it's more beneficial and insightful for our listeners to hear a person's perspective rather than the traditional question and answer format. So we're going to kind of keep this conversation free flowing as always. And firstly, I have to shout out the Melanated Conscious Society. MCS, headquartered in Jacksonville, Florida, is a mentorship organization teaching various life skills, self-sufficiency, and knowledge of self to the youth. Make sure you guys go follow them on Facebook and Instagram for the latest news and meetings and valuable information. And also shout out to our KWAZ Radio family. KWAZ providing the latest and greatest in conscientious-oriented content. Make sure you guys follow them on all forms of social media, as well as subscribe to the Bitter Medicine Podcast hosted by Koku and the Pro-Black Perspective hosted by Oni Tase. And lastly, the podcast is now on Patreon. Please donate. And of course, all proceeds go to upgrading the show and providing the best content we can for our loyal listeners. Also, for those listening to be featured in our business spotlight or looking to reach out to the show, feel free to drop an email at theharshrealitypod@gmail.com. Now, without further ado, let's get to our esteemed guests. And my guest today is the beautiful, outspoken, and eclectic Jenny, a.k.a. Jenny Rock. She is a libertarian podcaster, rising influencer, and most importantly, a full-time mother and nurturer of our future leaders, very important, and free thinkers. And I am grateful and highly honored she has taken my invitation to come onto the podcast and discuss a few topics. Jenny, you there?
Hey.
Hey, so a little bit on the introduction. I'm gonna give you a minute to tell us about yourself, anything relevant you think we need to hear in regards to your upbringing, your interest in politics, particularly being a libertarian, which we don't see too many of, and also any relevant and interesting background information you would like to share with the listeners here.
Okay. You know what? Thank you so much for that. Great introduction. I don't know about all that you said, but I will humbly accept that description. So a little bit about myself. Yes, my name is Jenny Rock. That really is my real name. I get asked that a lot. It's not Jennifer, it's just Jenny. And so I grew up in, well, you know what? I spent my formative years in Indiana, in a small town in Indiana. But I like to say I did my growing up at college. So I went to BYU, Idaho, and I grew up a lot there. I spent 4 years there. And I grew up in Switzerland, too. I only spent 18 months there, but I did a lot of growing up there.
Oh, wow.
And then I'm still growing up. I moved to Utah in 2004, and I've been here ever since. So that's a little bit about me. Growing up in Indiana, my family, we did not really speak about politics. That was not a tabletop discussion. I didn't even vote when I was a college student. That was not on my mind. I didn't even really know like what a Republican or a Democrat or a Libertarian. I didn't know those labels growing up. I actually left college not really knowing about politics. So that's shout out to my college education. Yes. So, but I do know, I do know about myself, my personality, just by nature, I am a rebel and I love liberty and I love free agency. And that's always been stressed in my life, is the free agency part. And so that's where I get a lot of my political principles. One of my ancestors is Thomas McKean, and Thomas McKean was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. Wow. So I will draw upon the power of my ancestors here, and I like to look back and study his history and his family, and just kind of get that fighting spirit in me as well.
Yeah, I hear you. So what would, particularly outside of being a natural freedom lover, which I'm sure you can tell with your family tree, right? What drew you to the libertarian movement, or what personality particularly drew you to that whole movement? Because normally most people I talk to, they cite Ron Paul, particularly the younger libertarians I meet. So what particularly drew you to that movement?
Gosh, without getting too much into it, I actually started listening and following Candace Owens. And I was listening to what she was having to say, and I was like, you know what? I agree with a lot of what's happening, what she's saying. But then I was like, but then a lot of what she's saying is really ugly. Let me branch out here. What else we got? And so, I'd say I've been in a bit of a bubble. I have four kids. I've been, and my youngest is barely over a year. So I've been in this motherhood bubble where I've been, forming my principles, but haven't been able to develop them or explore these interests of mine until just recently. So when I was exploring all these things and looking around and saying, what else we got? And I hopped on Twitter. That's when my eyes were opened to all kinds of different people. And yes, Ron Paul was one of them. But just honestly, like in the homeschool movement, where I was following the libertarian homeschooler. And I was like, these are the truths that I have been feeling, and somebody else is actually stating them. And so it just kind of exploded from there. So it was actually, I guess, that homeschool movement where I found a lot of influencers.
Okay, that's a little different. Normally, like I said, most people I hear talk about Ron Paul. They talk about Rand Paul. Uh-huh. Me myself, I kind of ran into it when I started listening to the brother Eric July. I started listening to Eric July.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay. And then he started speaking on being that, ANCAP and all this other stuff. I'm like, what is ANCAP? So I had to look all this stuff up, because personally, I come from a situation where I was, I would say 2008-ish, I was more so a Bernie bro. Like, I was like, everybody equal, and we need to do this, and we need to do that, and blah, 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 free college, yay, rah, 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 right? I started to do more research, particularly, as I started to advance more in my education, right? Because, I'm a veteran, so after the military, I started to go to college, and I started to research various things, and I took a couple of economic courses, right? And as you take economic courses, you kind of realize, this socialist thing don't kind of make sense, right? Like, mm-hmm. you start to do more research to the free market. And then, you know, naturally me being a contrarian, me being more so a freedom, you know, loving individual myself, it's like, I don't think you should force people to do this. And I don't think you should, you know, more so it should be a choice between things, right? So that kind of led my whole journey down the rabbit hole, right? And it's kind of funny. The name is Jenny Rock. You know, my father's side of the family, they're stone walls, right?
It's
like
yeah.
rocks and stone walls, right? And so I started getting more into, like, you know, following dudes like Dave Smith, Peter Quinones, Monica Perez, and started, you know, listening to their podcasts and things like that and what they have to say about things. And I'm like, oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense to me, right? Particularly after I saw Bernie sell out, which he did in a major way. So it's like, so that whole movement was killed. And like I said, I'm more so a freedom loving type of person myself. So that makes sense with me. But what you see a lot of people when they go to college, when they go to institutions of higher learning and things like that, it is way more, particularly nowadays, made way more leaning towards a liberal mindset. I used to remark that I used to have this English class I used to go to, man. I did not think it was an English class. It was more like an episode of The View. We used to go there and people would talk about their problems. The teacher was particularly left-leaning and very liberal. And she would talk about how her husband was Jewish and how she was mixed and how she had experienced so much racism. And it's kind of different perspective, too, because when you're the same age as a professor, because when you go to school later on in life, you end up being like the same age as some of the people teaching you, right? So it's like, I kind of, you know, fall into the same demographic as you, and I don't really feel what you're saying, you know. And so that's kind of when I more so started to, you know, look to more different resources and more so with people who have, you know, experienced things that I'm used to or experienced things that make more sense to me. And that's when I fell into kind of, you know, leaning towards the libertarian movement, although I could not say myself I'm more a libertarian because I think the NAP is not so. I don't think it applies nowadays, right? I think it's way too broad. I'm not an advocate of the NAP, but I do believe in like a lot of libertarian principles and things of what they're saying, right? So I'm kind of libertarian adjacent, I would say.
In terms of me. Well, yeah. So, and I'm not officially registered. I'm not registered as a libertarian on paper.
But I think more so you would agree to the principles of the NAB and things like that, right? Correct?
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, just because you ain't paid $25 on me.
I didn't do that.
I think it more so depends on who you vote for. But, you know, that leads me to, you know, going to the first topic I would like to discuss is like, why are more people specifically in the Black community embracing ideology of libertarianism, particularly if you look at it from an outsider perspective, right? As you know, particularly the Black community has been very, I would say, ostracized in terms of politics, are used, you know, specifically for their voting power, not necessarily catered to in terms of the policies, right? So you would think this would lead to a more so libertarian type of view from the Black community. So why do you think it's not even popular in the Black community to be libertarian leaning or even third party for that matter?
Well, okay, let me begin by saying I did not grow up in the Black community. I am not living in the Black community. So let me lead with that because I think my perspective is probably completely different from somebody else who is in that community. Because I think the people that I'm talking to are embracing these values. I think when I speak to my friends on specific issues, not broadly, but on a specific issue of what's going on in the world, that my friends they're able to see the nonsense of the government, and they're able to see how unfair, unnecessary, how much government intervention there is. And so that's my view, is I think the work is kind of being done there. I think the problem maybe with the embracing of it would be the reputation that libertarianism has, maybe like the label or the image that goes along with libertarianism. Mm. So I think, well, you want me to expand on that?
Yeah, go ahead. You realize what I was going to say. Expand on that.
Well, yeah, I think when you hear I'm a libertarian, that means Gadsden flag, the storming of the castle, or anarchism. And it's even been referred to as like that's the white man's politics, libertarianism. That's, you know, the redcoats, or the patriots, kind of, you know, with the pan flute. That's kind of the image that a lot of libertarians like to, they kind of lead with. And I definitely think that image can be changed with the right PR. But that's what my friends refer to. I actually have a little Gadsden flag in my flower bed. And when visitors come over, they used to not know what it was. They know now. But some of them, they still refer to it, and that's a racist flag. And so then we have to sit down and have a talk about how it's not a racist flag. But I am still trying to make those connections within my community, within my friends that I personally have. But like I said, I grew up in Indiana. I was adopted into a white family. So I have white parents. There are six other siblings, and we're all different colors. But I've got three other black siblings in my family. The most exposure I've ever had to black people was not until I moved here in Utah. So that was like back in 2004. So I can tell you, I have probably 30, maybe 35 on a good day, black friends personally, that I personally know in real life. So my understanding and perception of black communities is very different. My perception is formed through social media. If we want to be if we want to generally speak, that's how I am getting my perception. And so I'm thinking, hey, yeah, the people that I know, the people that I'm talking to, mm-hmm. actually, it makes sense to them, the way that I present ideas and ideals within libertarianism, especially with the idea of smaller government. You can hear me talking about that all the time.
Decentralization. And yes.
Decentralization. And my friends are nodding their heads, and they're saying amen and yes. And so I think there is an understanding, maybe more on like the individual level, but what do you think? Like, what are you thinking about?
Well, in terms of your story, I think you present a unique perspective, right? Being from Indiana, I'm right across the way in Chicago, right? Illinois. Okay. So I kind of definitely feel with you. I have family in Hammond. I have family in different parts of Indiana, Indianapolis, things like that. My father's in Louisville right now, which is right across the river. So I think that presents a unique perspective, right? I think actually that's a strength, right? Because although you may not have grew up specifically in the black community, due to your appearance, due to your phenotype, you're going to experience some of the things that, you know, the average black person will have to deal with, right? Because you're going to be looked at as that way, right? not to paint you into a box or anything like that, mm-hmm. but you're able to kind of, you know, navigate the perspective, kind of see where everybody is coming from due to your, you know, unique plot in life. So I think that's actually a pretty big strength in terms of getting your opinion on things. And in terms of like to say the Gaston flag and things like that. One of the things that's kind of crazy to me or kind of unique is the conservative libertarian kind of plot in life, right? The kind of forced alliance. Because if you kind of look at it, right? I've had plenty of disagreements with the, you know, the straight conservative movement, right? Also had, you know, me being a free thinker that I am, I also have my issues with the libertarian movement, right? But if you look at how it is trending nowadays with the leftists controlling pretty much every aspect of media, controlling every aspect of social media, controlling every aspect of sports, controlling every aspect of pretty much everything, right? In terms of what we consume on a daily basis, if you're an avid TV watcher or avid social media consumer, it's kind of forcing that forced alliance, right? So it's been times when I have commented on things, right? And it's like, I'll get like 20 conservative followers on Twitter. So it's like, oh, he's one of us. And then I'll put something else. And it's like, oh, no, he's not one of us. I want to say I had this crazy discussion at work, right? So I was talking to this, me and this other guy was having a discussion in terms of number 44, you know, Mr. OBZ, Obama. And I was kind of getting in my you know, more so libertarian, conservative, free thinking bag and getting in my bashing moments, right? And so the conservative guy listening kind of heard me, you know. And so he's like, oh man, I got a friend right here, right? So he started to, you know, talk to me. He's like, oh man, I feel you, blah, 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 blah. He started to rattle to me off a bunch of Thomas Jefferson quotes, right? And so I'm listening and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, that's cool. I'm like, so did he make that quote before or after he raped his slave for the night?
You said that?
Yes. Okay. It was like deafening silence, like, oh, word. So it's kind of hard being kind of in that perspective where you're more so libertarian leaning or you're more so not necessarily where you're left or right, but you're more so in your own type of lane in terms of ideology, that you will get different people that who are more so left or right, big team goal type of people, and then they'll talk to you and be like, you know, it's the tribalism is very strong, you know.
Well, yeah, I think that's why when I started out on this journey, I was more conservative leaning, and like I said, I was following Ms. Owens and but then I was like, hey, this is not cute what's happening within this movement. Let me go over here, because this is more where I live on the libertarian side. But it's true, I feel like the conservative and libertarian, we get kind of lumped together. How do we make more of a distinction? How do we educate others that there is a distinct difference?
I'm not even gonna say conservative, because shout out to Felicia Killings with the Conscious Conservative Movement. I had an interview with
that is true.
I even think it's a distinction amongst conservatives in terms of Republicans, right? I don't think Republicans in today's are necessarily conservative. I think they're pro big government. I think they have no problem spending, being spendthrift in terms of, you know, the budgets. I think they don't mind the big government and regulations and things, as long as it's their team that's doing it. I don't consider that a conservative movement. I consider that tribalism. I consider that Republican tribalism.
That's big government.
So I think it's various various tribes or various movements, various ideologies that we have out here that need to be distinct. But if you don't follow this certain, if you don't follow this certain woke movement or whatever, now you're automatically lumped to the conservative, right? It's not even a distinction, particularly if you deal with the left or dealing with liberal movements. They don't distinguish anything. It's like, if you don't hate Trump, we don't like you. Like, if you don't do this, if you're not this, if you don't believe, you know, critical theory should be taught in the schools, if you don't believe, you know, men can have babies, we don't care what you're talking about. Right?
Yeah.
So I think a distinction needs to be made in terms of that.
Yeah. You know what? I do agree with that. I think whatever, it's kind of like religion too, right? It's like whatever path is going to get you there, like, let's take that path. But that goal, right? I think within many conservative people and, of course, in libertarianism, the goal perhaps is the same, but the road to get there is different.
That's true. Like I said, I used to be a very liberal guy. Like I said, I come from Chicago, the most bluest of the bluest cities, right? So my whole upbringing was basically, if you're not Democrat, you're racist, right? These people who are non-Democrats are racist, right? But then as I dug deeper into this thing, and as I also, you know, I joined the military and got to see other areas, got to see other cities, got to see interact with different people with different ideologies.
Uh-huh.
And as I looked back at Chicago, which was distinctly blue, forever blue, and my neighborhood, pretty much, if you went back to the 1970s to the 2021, the neighborhood looks exactly the same. I guarantee you the wealth gap would be the same. The you know, poverty would be the same. The dilapidation, the crime, things of that nature would be exactly the same from the 70s to 2020 or 2021. Mm-hmm. No change. Although y'all been voting for the same supposedly non-racist liberal party that loves you so much. So at a certain point, it has, the Stockholm syndrome has to wear off. What's going on? Why are we not getting these contracts? Why is the neighborhood not changing? Why? We have to ask why. You know. So that leads me to like the next topic. Because I think we had a little discussion, me and you, you know, on that cesspool called Twitter, in terms of the victimhood mentality, right? And it was a very, and you know, considering your unique perspective of your upbringing and things like that, my upbringing, which, you know, maybe opposite of yours, right? So, but at kind of at the end of the day, we kind of, you know, kind of agree on certain things. We may have an issue, but no, is victimhood mentality, is it even a real issue? And also, you know, personal accountability. As we know, personal accountability is on the decline. I would believe, I think you would believe, that personal accountability is not anything that's admired these days, right? Is that part of this thing called this victimhood mentality? What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so I'll tell you right now, I know one of my weaknesses, my husband likes to point it out to me, is that I get caught up in semantics a lot. I am a word person. I was an English major. I pay attention to the semantics and the words. So I am digging into victim. What does that even mean? What is a victim? So let me give you that definition. A victim is a person harmed, injured, or killed as a result of a crime, accident, or other event or action. Similar words means sufferer, injured party, injured person, wounded person, a loss. But check out the opposite, what the opposite of a victim is. The attacker and the assailant. So I thought that was very interesting. The second definition of a victim that was given was a person who is tricked or duped. And similar words are easy target, easy prey, fair game, sitting target, and then it's kind of just a repeat prey. So I'm looking at these words And do we not all suffer? Have we not all suffered in this life? Every day, there's some sort of injustice that goes on in our life. Something is not fair in our life, whether it's, he cut me off when I was driving and I got stopped at the red light, or McDonald's, that machine was broken. And so, like, anything little or big, every day we face some sort of injustice. Every day we are victims of something that has wronged us. But then you look deeper into it, like I said, with the first definition and the similar words, where it's like a wounded person. We're not wounded every day. I do not live in the kind of life where I am wounded every day, but I know there are people out there who are. Every day it is hard. It is a struggle. They are kicked when they're already down, and there are real victims out there, real people who are suffering. Like, their entire lives started out just with suffering. It is not pretty. Life is not pretty for anybody. So I wanted to get to that definition first of, like, what is a victim? Because, like I said, we all are victims of something, but the victimhood, that the hood as in staying there, I would say that part is where it becomes a choice, because that would be your mindset. Now, mm-hmm. Now let me expand on that, because that sounds really harsh. It sounds really callous. But you can only make choices in your life when you have the tools. If you don't have that tool in your back pocket, it's mm-hmm. not even a choice. You can't get out of your tool belt the hammer if the hammer's not in your tool belt. Right? So people that are having and suffering from this victimhood mentality, if they don't have the tool to choose to even see life in a different way, to make choices to get out of certain situations, or if they are in a certain situation, if that it's the mental decisions that's going on, if they don't have those tools, that education, then they will be in there. Now, in that mentality. The other thing I wanted to say about that was that it's very natural. Victimhood is a natural thing. Like mm-hmm. I said, I have 4 kids. Every day it's hard for them. There's something that goes wrong on the hour with my kids, and there's something that makes them upset. But I, as a mother, my job is to give them the tools to pick themselves back up, to move forward, to learn, to grow, to become stronger. But like I said, it's these tools. If you've never been handed these tools, how are you supposed to do that? Mm-hmm. Who's going to give you those tools? Because those tools do not come naturally. It takes hard work to develop it.
Exactly. I would agree with that. I would say part of that tool set is having a nuclear family, right? I say part of that tool set of learning to overcome this victim mentality is having a mother and a father who can teach you to keep persevering through whatever adversities you may overcome, right? You should never linger in your challenges, right? It should be something to overcome to make you a better person at the end of the day, which is why I think this victimhood, which why I say victimhood mentality, I would never look to pounce upon anybody who's a real victim of anything, right? If you've experienced, you know, different racism, if you experience racism, you experience sexism, you experience homophobia, things of that nature, I would never downplay your experience because those things do exist. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you have two outcomes from that, right? You can either persevere or you can wallow in that. So that's what I mean by victimhood, is that you can wallow in that, and that could be part of your personality and part of your identity, is to be a permanent victim, right? You could be a permanent mm-hmm. woe is me type person, or you could say, okay, this happened to me this one time, I'm going to overcome it, and it's never going to happen to me again because I'm going to make myself a better person. I'm going to challenge you and your ideals, and at the end of the day, I'm going to be a stronger person for that. That's much different than saying, oh, it's race. I can never achieve because racism exists, and I can't get a business loan because I'm black, or I can't get a business loan because I'm Arab, or, you know, because I'm a woman, I will never get this promotion and things like that. It's like, no, you're not going to let that stop you. It may be one jerk out there who tries to prevent that, but at the end of the day, you're going to overcome that. And that's the antithesis, that's the you know antonym for victimhood mentality, is perseverance. I'm going to go through this, you know what I mean? I'm gonna keep pushing and I'm gonna do that. And I don't think that's being taught enough. Actually, I think people are rewarded for trying to be permanent victims, are part of the permanent victim class, from people who are trying to exploit that population. And you can see that every day, you know.
Yeah. I agree with that. I guess I do want to maybe, I had asked you on Twitter, do you personally know somebody that lives in that hood?
Yeah,
that type of mentality, because mm-hmm. something happened to me that really pushed me away from, anyway, I was having a conversation with, this self-proclaimed freedom fighter guy here in Utah. And he kind of thinks he's a big deal, but he was having a side convo with me about the Black community. And he was putting that label on, and he was saying, so you don't think the Black community has a problem with victimhood mentality? And I said, no, I do not. All of the 30 Black people that I know, that I associate with, no, they do not. And so that is my general assessment. That's what I'm running with. And how dare you? How dare you come and try and tell me that you think the Black community is having this victimhood mentality? Because I wasn't having that. That's one of the issues that I have right now. With a lot of these quote unquote freedom fighters, they like to come for the Black community and put them down and say, if only they just would, you know, pick themselves up off their bootstraps.
Pick yourself up by the bootstraps.
Get out of this victimhood mentality. And it's such a talking point. And I'm just sitting here like, first of all, where's your empathy? Okay. I understand. I do see the exploitation, and it is wrong. But first of all, let's come out the gate with the empathy for people who do not have that tool. Because and you had even said it too, like when something horrible happens to you and you choose not to wallow in it, and you tell yourself, all right, that happened that one time, but let me persevere. Let me move forward. But perseverance does not come naturally. Mm-hmm. That is learned.
Mm-hmm. It is taught.
And so who's teaching these people? And second of all, and let me go off on a tangent for a minute, because I'm like, like I said, I don't know people living in this mentality, and that might be me just being really naive, but like, I'm failing to understand why that is such a talking point and why people feel like they have the right to label an entire community as people who are suffering from victimhood mentality. Like, they don't even have a real Black friend in their life, but yet they are saying this. That's what I don't understand. After that conversation, I was like, I don't think that we're like, this isn't a friendship. So that friendship was terminated. He doesn't know that, but
he'll find out.
Yeah. He'll learn. And I kind of have that chip on my shoulder. Like, listen, if you're going to talk about the Black community, you better at least have one Black friend in your life, in real life, get one. Don't look at social media. Don't look at, what you see on the news. Don't look at a certain spokesperson who thinks she can talk for the Black community, because like I said, I'm not even living in the Black community. I can't say that I represent it, but get yourself a Black friend first and get to know somebody first before you make any sort of, I don't know, man, you're about to make me getting all upset.
But that kind of leads to another topic I would like to go into, is like, what is a community, right? You cannot lump Black people into the monolith. You cannot just say that, you know, if you see a Black person, oh, he's from the inner cities, from the hood. He probably doesn't have a father. We are, you know, 13% of 330 million people, right? It is millions upon over 40 million Black people, and everybody has their own unique perspective, right? You cannot lump every Black person into a monolith. Whereas so half of the Black community doesn't live in a Black community, right? They live in an integrated community. So you can't sit here and say all of these things and all these other issues and just sit here. Because once you do that, once you put like everybody into a monolith, once you participate into this this big tribalist type of ideology, then you're basically marginalizing every Black person who necessarily doesn't have that perspective, doesn't have that point of view. You yourself are subject to that because you didn't necessarily grow up in the ghetto or grow up in the hood. But at the same time, you still have to deal with even that conversation you just told me about, this friend you told me about, that they looking at you as part of the Black community, right? Mm-hmm. By what they're saying to you and by why them asking you these different. So they are in themselves participating in this tribalistic mentality where, so I'm not judging you by your own unique perspective or what you may have been through, or are asking you questions as to what you've been through or what your upbringing is, which is why I start every podcast off with, tell us about your upbringing. What did you go through? Because you necessarily didn't go through what I went through or what anybody else went through. And that's not marginalizing anybody's experience, but if you're going to be sincere about what you're doing, you need to get to know a person one-on-one. Because if you ask 7 billion people on this earth their experience, you're going to get 7 billion different answers. And that's my big issue with what we're experiencing now. So I guess I should rephrase in terms of victimhood mentality into terms of monolithic thinking. Because once you fall into this monolithic thinking, once you start to place yourself into different categories that you necessarily don't prescribe to or that you didn't experience, and you start to look at everything in black and white and you don't see the gray, you're automatically falling into this mentality that's not beneficial for anybody. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep. So I had, I was at a little social get together and I had this girl come up to me and she said, oh yeah, you know what? I grew up in the ghetto of Ogden, Utah. And so she was trying to relate to me and was saying all these things. I grew up around so many Black people and she was a white girl and just that's how she introduced herself to me was this. And I was like, that's very interesting. I didn't even waste my time and tell her about myself because she had already just placed me and just had said like, oh yeah. So, you know, let me try and relate to you because you're Black. So you must've also come from here. Mm-hmm. And I just, that kind of stuff. I cannot stand. I was like, I do not relate to you on this. But you know what? I think there's different definitions maybe of Black community, because don't get me wrong, like I do identify and I say I am part of a Black community. The community would be the color of my skin, the hair type that I have. That is a part of a community. Because like I said, I grew up with white parents and my entire neighborhood, school, all of that, there was me and one other girl in my grade that was Black, and that was it. And so I wasn't exposed to a physical, living, breathing community, right? Where my neighbors were Black. That's what I'm referring to as far as community, as in my neighbors, I go to my grocery store, my surroundings was not like that. But I for sure have a Black community. I guess that's more like in my heart, right? Not to be so cheesy, but that's in my heart. That's something that I have in common with someone else. Automatically, we have that in common, is our skin color. That's a commonality.
That's very commonality. I think in terms of like when I went to the military, we had this different exercises that we went to, right? And they had an exercise where they just had a bunch of us walk to a room, and it was like, all right, everybody pick a table to sit at, you know, and we're not gonna tell y'all where to sit at, and you know, we just let y'all be at that, right? So me, another brother, and another sister end up sitting there at one table. It was like three chairs at every table, you know, and you had this, you know, table, a couple of white people and things like that. And then once the instructor came in, she was asking us like, oh, so why did you choose that table? You know, oh, this dude looks cool. You know, this dude. So it got to our table. It was like, hey, they look like me. So I figured it was cool. So that's part of human nature, is to kind of be drawn to people who may sort of have your phenotype or may sort of look like you. I mean, it's not necessarily a racist thing. It's just that, you know, hey, person was like, they may be cool, they may relate to me more, you know, they may have the experience that I went through, so I'm gonna be drawn to it. Doesn't necessarily mean I reject that table over there, you know, but it's just so I'm going to play it safe in this situation and gravitate towards those who may have my same phenotype, you know.
And I am no psychologist, but I should probably go see one. But with your example right there, I can tell you that if I was 15, 16, and was in that same situation as you, as to pick a table, I would not have gone to go sit with all the Black kids. I would have gone and sat with all the white kids.
Interesting. Now, you know we're going to have to dissect that one. That's going to be
one day. Yes. And being biracial, I think that also puts a little bit of pressure on the whole which one do I choose type of thing. So but we'll dissect that another time after I go see a therapist and start to understand myself a little bit more. It's so deep.
Understood. I will say on a closing with the subject, you know, that's one of my biggest issue in terms of the Caucasian or white liberal type of movement, is that, you know, I seen this one video. This guy had to be 120, 130 pounds, glasses on, nerdy looking white guy. And he's explaining how if you're white and you're not anti-racist, that you're you know, proponent of white supremacy and how you're oppressing the Black person and how you're doing this and that and the third. And it's like, you don't see that as an insult, you know? Like, first and foremost, I'm 6 foot, 135 pounds. I'm in the gym 5 days a week. You're not oppressing me, dude. I'll smack you to sleep. Okay. and it's like, you don't see that as an insult. Like, it's kind of crazy that your own supremacy or superiority in your head makes you think that you need to uplift the Black community, when in reality, the best thing you do for Black community is leave us the hell alone, let us succeed, right? Or right? even in terms of individual, we don't necessarily need a nanny state or a helper to uplift the poor Black person who needs the white liberals' help to succeed, otherwise he can't make it in life. You know, that in itself is probably the biggest racist thing you can ever say to a black person.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't see a problem with that. And that's, I think that's part of the line you're seeing nowadays, or the draw that you're seeing in terms of what's going on. Mm-hmm. But going on to the next topic, which I know you're big at, you're a mother. You're a very dedicated mother from what I've seen. So raising children in this current climate. And one thing I definitely need to talk to you about is the homeschool debate. Also, we're going to hit maybe some critical theory and specific challenges, particularly with this pandemic. So
what's there to debate? I mean, there is no debate.
I would agree. I think the only thing that I think maybe people draw people off from it is how to get their social skills, right? Half of schooling is interaction, right? Learning how to navigate with different personalities, learning how to talk to different people and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest challenge I think presented to people in terms of just having time, because we all know nowadays both parents usually have to work, which is a challenge unto itself. But how do you get that social interaction in with your children to make sure that they're, you know, normal, social functioning human beings as they grow up, you know?
Yeah, well, and first let me address maybe the stigma that that the only place you can really learn social skills would be at public school or at any sort of traditional school, because let's look at those for a second. Like, how much socializing really is going on in the traditional schools right now? You come in. So first of all, I used to be a teacher. I forgot to tell you that.
You can't forget that one. That's a big what if, right?
I was a teacher for 11 years. I forgot about that. Yes, I taught at a private school and then a charter school. And then I said, I'm done. I'm doing this on my own. So I've been in there. I've been in the classroom. I know what it's like. I've had that mentality as well, that teacher mentality. As far as students, you come in, you sit down, butts in seats, do your work, don't talk to your friends until it's recess. At lunchtime, you shut up and eat, come back, let's do it again until 3 o'clock. I'll see you tomorrow. Like all of that. That makes me sound like I was a horrible, mean teacher. I wasn't. But I made that sound really horrible, because I think the social skills, I think, is another sort of assembly line. I view traditional schools, mainly public schools. There are a lot of good private schools out there. But the traditional way to educate a child is very assembly line oriented. And that also includes social skills. So I do not use traditional schools as any sort of meter or thermometer. I'm losing my whatever word you want to use. Ruler. I don't use that as a gauge at all. However, the community that I live in has a pretty strong homeschooling community. And so the children and the parents, we get together often and we teach each other, and we live in our own little community during schooling hours. And I think that a big thing that I make sure that my children know is that we are learning round the clock. It's not 3 o'clock and then we're done. Mm. There's always a time. There's always a teaching opportunity, always a great time to learn. So as far as those social skills, I'm not even worried about it. You get the weirdos anywhere. I'm a weirdo and I'm a result of public school. There were always nerds and people who didn't know how to talk in public school. Mm-hmm. They didn't know how to quite socialize and fit in, or their public speaking skills were horrible. Like,
look here, look here. You have explained nothing. I succeeded in school, in public school. I was on both spectrums, right? I was the kid in elementary school that got all A's and skipped the grade. Then I went to high school and I got with like the wrong crowd and I failed the grade and was out there gangbanging and gambling and doing whatever. Okay. And then I got to college as an older adult and got a 3.8 GPA and got 2 or 3 degrees. So there's nothing you could tell me, because you can gain social skills from anything. Not all social skills are great. Like, I learned some terrible, terrible things. And
there's a lot of things I don't need my kids learning.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, so you, and then you have soccer programs. As I have kids, you got, you know, different rec soccer programs and basketball, volleyball. You have various martial arts, things that you can put your kids in where they can be around other kids and still get that time, still get that interaction, because kids, well, at the end of the day, need to interact with other kids.
They do. They do. And but my husband and I are very calculated in this, because I had kind of a wake up call, and there was something that I missed that was sort of a repeat of the way that I was raised. So, like I said, the community that I live in right now is getting better with diversity, but it's not super diverse. And my husband kind of brought that to my attention as my children are getting older. And he said, okay, our kid can go and sign up for basketball here in this very same community and play with the same kids in the neighborhood that he sees all day, every day. We go to church with them, or we can sign him up for basketball across town, 20 minutes away, and have him be completely on his own and do this and kind of push him more out of his comfort zone. I said, okay, let's do it. You do have to be intentional. I'm not saying, let me just sit back and I'm homeschooling and all the kids just play together all the time. No, we have to be very calculated on certain things, so that my children are exposed to diversity of thought, diversity in race, diversity in religion, just diversity in general. We really want that for our children, because neither one of us, my husband and I, were not exactly raised in that way. And we can both recognize that and make that improvement for our children.
I think you hit on a good subject in itself, being calculated with how you raise your children, right? I think one of the things that's missing, particularly in the American culture, is that we've taught, which not necessarily a terrible thing, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's not necessarily a great thing. You basically tell your kids, you can be whatever you want to be, and then you send them to school, and then that's the end of it, right? You don't take time to see what your kid maybe excels at, maybe what your kid is more drawn to, what their natural inclination is to, what they gravitate towards, to their skills. Because let's face it, when you're 17, 18, it's probably the most confusing time in your life. You don't know what the hell you want to be, or what you want to grow up to be, or what your natural skills are at. That's where it's up to your parents. And I think a lot of different communities have a better understanding at this, and they trying to gravitate their kids toward this. Like, oh, you gravitate towards this medical field, you're good at this. Or you gravitate towards, you know, you're more argumentative, you're good at having a debate with people. Maybe you should get into the lawyer field. We need a lawyer in the family, things like that. We kind of just rely on just like, hey, figure it out. Bye-bye. You know, you're 18, go to school. Decide what you want to be in life. Good luck. You know, talk to a counselor. And we're not intentional with what we do. And I think that's a big disadvantage in the American system of how we school our children, and not as parents, because who knows what your kid is better at than the parent if you're an active parent, right? You know exactly. And it's funny because I had this conversation before I went to the military, yo. I'll never forget my grandma, who, you know, rest her soul, she kind of raised me, and she was telling me, she was like, "You sure you want to go to the military?" She was like, I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I'm in Chicago. I need to get out of here. I need to do something different in my life. I need to get around from this environment." She was like, "Well, you know, you don't like to listen to people." and she was definitely right. I am very, anti-authoritarian, right? That's like, yeah, why I gravitate towards libertarianism. I'm very anti-authoritarian. But she was, God forbid, she was definitely right. I do not like to listen to people. I do not have to have people tell me what I need to do, where I need to be, and all those things. But at the time of my life, I kind of needed that, right? Sometimes you need things that you may not so enjoy, you know, particularly if you're a male, right? You need to have that discipline. You need to have that instilled into you. Not no knock on the females or anything. But I think we're having a generation of males who haven't taught the responsibility of being a man, right? So I think that kind of helped me in my journey in terms of that. Not saying that was the only way to get that education. Not saying that was the only way to get that learning, but at the time I think that's what helped me. But it just highlights my point that nobody knows you better than, you know, the people who raised you, real, you know? And I think we just need a resurrection of that in any community, in terms of telling you, okay, you're good at this, maybe you should gravitate towards this, because at 18-19 you don't know what the hell you want to do or where you want to be or anything like that. So
no, but I kind of disagree. So I think I know my kids. I think I know them very well. Mm-hmm. I think I know what they like, what they love. I think I know what they're good at. But you'd be surprised. My children, they really do know themselves. And when you create that sort of environment for them to early on figure out for themselves, here is what I like, here is what I don't like, and you kind of let them foster it and let them develop their skills naturally, organically. Mm-hmm. I, as the parent and the teacher, I am not steering the boat as much as I am just making sure it doesn't crash. So I like to look at homeschooling, the way that I homeschool and the way that I educate, is I look at it like a buffet, like a smorgasbord. Mm-hmm. And I have all of these things laid out. Like, you're going to Chuck-O-Rama or wherever. What is that place out in Indiana? You know, those, you know what I'm talking about, right? You go to the place where there's a buffet and you don't put everything on your plate. You look at this cottage cheese over here and you say, "No, thank you." You come over to the fried chicken and you take 3 or 4 pieces. You get this, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You get a lot of something else. And that's the way that I like to homeschool, is I will put everything out on the table and say, "Look at this life. Look at everything. All of these possibilities. What looks good? What do you want to try? And if you want to have a little bit of this over here and take a lot of this over here, that's fine." And like I said, I kind of let them steer the boat. If I see it crashing, you know, we're going to, you know, you can't just live off of ice cream. let's get some vegetables in there. That's where I have the foundation, right? My 8-year-old, he knows how to read. He didn't learn how to read just because I said, "Here's a bunch of books, now teach yourself." So he learned how to read at 3 because I sat with him. I said, "Here's your smorgasbord. Here's the letters. Here are the sounds. What can we do with these? Let's go." And so that's kind of my approach to education. I let them steer the boat they really do know, but it's got to be early on. You were saying when you come out of high school and you're 18 and 19, you don't know what you want to do. You're kind of lost. Where are you going? But you said it yourself. You know, your grandma had said, rest in peace, Gran. But she had said, you don't want to do that because you don't like to listen to people. But what did you go ahead and do anyway?
Exactly. That's
and you had made that choice.
Exactly. I think that's where we have to get back to the roots. I know you're a spiritual woman. I know you're a religious woman yourself, a woman of faith, right? Mm-hmm. One thing you have to consider is duality. No matter what religion you prescribe to, there is always a concept of duality, whether it be good or evil, peace and chaos, good and bad, heaven and hell. It's always duality. There's always a balance, right? Mayat, if you're comedic, right? Which this is teaching, right? So teaching in itself is not necessarily me instilling something into you, right? I think you hit that. I think you hit that on the head. It's me bringing out what's inside of you to its fullest potential. And that's what I don't think we have in the public school system. It's not about bringing about what's inside of you to the forefront and elevating that to its fullest potential. It's about trying to instill certain things into you, pushing things into you, pushing certain facts that you need to memorize, certain ideologies that you need to prescribe to. It's not about bringing out your natural inclination. And I think that's where you have a disconnect. And even so, if you look at the curriculum of the school system, as you being a teacher, also know it's certain milestones that you need to hit. And teachers get incentivized to hit these milestones. So rather than teach you what may necessarily be beneficial to you as a student, what may be beneficial to you to your life, I'm just going to teach you to pass this test. Yep. So my classroom can look good. So the school can look good. So we can get more money. Yep. And that is where homeschool pretty much, you know, overlays all that, because I have an incentive for you to succeed because you're my seed, right? You're my son. You're my daughter. It's beneficial to the family unit for you to succeed, for you to be the best person that you can be. You know.
But I also homeschool the neighbor kid as well.
But even your neighbor kid is like, you don't want to raise a bad neighbor kid because the kid got live next to me. Okay. He may end up dating my kid, you know? So
as a community, I am passionate about education and about children. And so, I mean, I can only handle one. I'm not opening up a school anytime soon, but there was an opportunity for this child also to come into my home and to be homeschooled and to join our little classroom. And I love that. And so I am passionate about education, not just because of my own children, but because I love the future generation. This next generation, as much as people are bagging on them and saying, oh man, these kids they're going to grow up in a horrible world. They are so strong and so smart, and they are going places. I believe in them so much.
I think that's actually a benefit from the homeschool. I think it is actually breaking up this monopoly that that state-run education is the best education. And now you have the pods where communities are getting together and teaching each other. You have school choice, where that money that may go to that public school can now go to the student. And whether you choose to homeschool them or send them to a private school or send them to a pod, you're seeing a big change. These unions are being broken up. I think that the teacher union is one of the most terrible ideas I've ever heard in my life. If you're being paid by public funds, you should not be allowed to unionize because you're a public servant at that point. Public servants shouldn't be allowed to unionize. And I'm not even an anti-union person. I think we have great benefits in this nation as a union. But at the same time, you are being paid by the public to do a service. Therefore, you should not be able to hold the public hostage to your demands to provide the service that they've already prepaid for. That is, mm-hmm. I idiotic in my mind. You know?
We really did prepay.
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone. It's bye bye. So it's like once you stop and you dissect these things to their core value, when you don't think about it emotionally and when you think about it logically, I think that's the big problem people have, is stop applying emotion to everything and start applying logic to things. And when you think about these school boards, when you think about these school unions and things like that, what our kids are learning and things like that, it makes zero sense what's going on right now. We had people in certain states that pay for a whole year of education for your child to be in that seat, getting two meals, getting daycare and aftercare and all of that, right? And you didn't get none of that. Yet you didn't get no refund on your tax donations.
I know.
How does that work? How it's are people not accepting it?
Yeah. It's just happening, but it's not. Yeah, it's not working. It's not beneficial. But
it's not even benefit. It's a monopoly. It's a racket. Once you get to that point where I'm paying for something I don't get, that's called a robbery. You are stealing from me. Like, and if people don't rise up to a certain point, and even if you don't agree, even if you believe that, you know, the COVID is the worst thing since sliced bread and everybody needs to stay home and things like that, you should still agree that you should get some of your freaking money back, you know, because you paid for a whole school year and sports and things of that. All that is gone out of your pockets, you know, and instead of giving you back, they're doing lotteries for getting a jab. You know, that's a whole different subject.
Yes, next time.
Next time. And that's about it all I got. Last thing I got is Orange Man Returns. We heard the speech with old 45 coming back and sounding real presidential, I guess, in this.
Any thoughts? Heard about it. I didn't tune in. I just heard about it. I was like, are we moving on? So I went to Florida a few weeks ago, and where I stayed in this little cul-de-sac, and every little house in this cul-de-sac, they were still flying Trump flags. I was like, do you understand? Maybe you don't understand what's already come to pass. But so I don't know. And maybe we can turn this back and say, I would say that that's sort of some sort of victimhood mentality. Can you please crawl out of that Trump hole and move forward and persevere, and let's go. Come on, get out of there. We're moving forward.
Yeah, let's move on. I don't understand that at all. If I had to pick a hero, it definitely wouldn't be Mr. Donald Trump.
He is not the savior. I think that definitely is. Like, he is the savior, and it's not that. No, there's no saving happening.
And you
are the savior.
Exactly, and it's funny because the right rags on the left. It's like, the only reason you voted for Biden didn't get the most votes in history, and you know, the only reason y'all just hate Trump because y'all vote. But then at the same time, you're making a deity. You're making a it's like, at the end of the day, this dude still was the president who had ultimate power, who could have probably prevented any situation upon which he would have been cheated or anything else, because you hold the ultimate power as commander in chief. Yet you weren't able to stave off a 80-year-old Dixie crat who has a speech impediment and whose son smokes crack. And it's like, so either you were in on it or you're incompetent. And either way, I'm not going to deitize you. Right.
And is that not victimhood right there? You are sitting here crying and laying in your bed, in your Trump bed, with all your Trump friends. To me, that's the epitome of victimhood. Like,
victimhood.
What did I say? One of the synonyms for being a victim would be a loser, right? When you lose something, they were wounded, they were injured, they suffered a casualty, And they're just still down there, these Trumpers.
Yeah, and you
die hard pinning
them. What, 2024? You're pinning on an 80-year-old Trump to lead you to victory.
Okay.
All right. That sounds like a plan. And you know, it's funny because I had the news with Fauci, right? You know, with, you know, his emails coming out, things like that. I'm not going to go into too much of detail because every time I speak on that guy, my episodes tend to get flagged. So
watch what you say.
Watch what I say. But it's funny because you had a lot of the people on the right ragging on these emails like, oh, we was right. We was right. Be like, but the guy you worship wouldn't fire this guy.
No, I don't know.
And his biggest attribute, what he is known for, is a reality show in which he fired people.
I don't know what that was about, but all I'm seeing is Trump making faces at him. That's all I saw the whole time was he was just giving him sideways glares.
You know, Anthony is very smart. Anthony is very, he's very intelligent.
And that's so, it. That's
if you look at his administration, he was still firing people. He was firing people left and right. Yet you let this guy who's paid more than you, by the way, who's the highest paid federal employee in history.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, he makes more than the president. And you wouldn't even, not only not fire him, and not only as a federal employee, you don't even have to fire him. You can move him to a desk job anywhere and keep his same salary. I can move you to a closet at the CDC, or I can move you to you know, being the highest paid lifeguard at the federal pools or whatever. I can do that. But he didn't do that.
He didn't make any of those moves.
So
I don't understand it.
But and so then to hold him up as the savior is just so it's like, oh my god.
Right. He's and not it, what's he gonna do for you?
Yeah, eat pizza without cheese. I mean eat pizza and not, you know, eat the crust or whatever. Whatever he does, his weird eating habits, it's probably what he's doing. I would say, and then you have so many people who are conservative leaning, who are young, who have fresh ideas, who are trying to push, you know, different ideologies, different things that are beneficial to the actual people. Like I said, we even talked about Felicia early. We talked about, you know, you got King Randall out there. If y'all really wanted to go in this direction, it is so many new fresh faces out here. Even if you wanted to go in the DeSantis direction, you know what I'm saying, you can do that. But to recycle 45, I really don't get the,
you don't need that.
No, I don't see it as beneficial. But I think that about wraps it up. I done took as much as your time. I took your hour up. I know you gotta get to those babies. So in closing, I'm going to let you plug whatever you want to plug, whether your business. I don't know if you're starting the podcast. I know you got a couple episodes up. Events, social media, whatever you want to plug. This is your time to shine. So do what you do.
Okay. So if you're interested in homeschooling, interested in that sort of adventure at all, you can follow me on Instagram at Homeschool of Rock. And we have a lot of fun over there. And that's about it. That's me. Oh, and you can find me on Twitter at Jenny E Rock.
Shout out. I know you like, I think at one point I saw you was like under me in followers and I look up, you like doubled me in followers. So you've been doing it. I'm like, whoa, she is killing me. So shout out to you. Obviously you've been saying things that resonate with people, man. That's why I called you a rising influencer, because you definitely are, whether you recognize it or not, you will be a voice in the future and your unique perspective is going to resonate with a lot of people. On both sides of the aisle. That's why I'm grateful to be able to talk to you right now. So when you blow up, I could be like, you know, I interviewed her back in the day.
This was great. I had a lot of fun. This was good. And you made me think about some things. So I took a couple notes and wrote some things down here that I'd like to explore more and other things that I need to work on as well. So thanks for bringing that out and bringing that to my attention.
No problem, man. I'm, like I said, I'm trying to get some more co-hosts on here rather than not doing the interview. I love the interview thing, but I would like to go back to the panel discussion. So maybe I can coax you into, coming on one day as a permanent figure. We're going to talk about it. But I appreciate you coming on, doing the interview segment with me. And on behalf of the staff here at the Harsh Reality Podcast, I got to say peace.
All right.